hour number three of Sports 180 kicking off right now on the Sports Animal. I'm Heather Harrington along with Vince Ferrara. Logan Ward is back at the Budweiser Studios pushing all the right buttons. And we're pleased to be joined with our next guest, Devin Driscoll from D1 Sports. And Devin, thanks so much. I know we had to reschedule you from earlier this week, so thanks for your flexibility. But I wanted to ask you right off the bat, what's more concerning to coaches, players coming back overweight or underweight?
That's a good question, Heather, and thanks for having me on. I mean, it just depended on the athlete and the situation they're in. And what kind of weight we're talking about. Like, you know, Jacob Warren, tight end over at University of Tennessee, he's put on about 17 pounds of good weight over the break. So for him, it was something that he needed to do. When he came back, he put on the right weight the right way. So I think if athletes, you know, increase their size, but in a healthy, positive fashion, that coaches will be thrilled. Unfortunately, I think there'll be a lot of athletes that probably haven't come back that way. But, you know, I think overall there's some players that really put some serious work in, and they're going to reap the benefits because of it.
So, Devin, with the whole all of the safety and health measures that you're taking with social distancing, how much does that limit you, if at all, in terms of the productive type of workouts that you're able to? Are there any limitations at all, or do you think they can still get the same quality of work in?
Well, we're very lucky in Hardin Valley that we have a very open facility. So, you know, for us, space is on our side. So we're able to do a lot of things safely and to abide by the guidelines that the health department here in Knox County has provided us, that we've been able to work within the guidelines and system that we've had to be able to do. I think for other people, possibly in situations, it's made it more difficult. But I think, like a lot of other people, we've just had to get very creative throughout the process. I think the hardest thing for us is stuff like, you know, spotting an athlete when they're trying to do any kind of max effort in a movement, and it becomes a safety precaution. I think sometimes that's been the most difficult thing is situational stuff like that. But overall, it just made us get a little more creative, and you know, we're just working a little bit harder, a little bit longer through our days, a little bit longer because we're spacing stuff out the other day to minimize people in the building at one certain time. But overall, it hasn't been as much of a hurdle as I thought it would have been if you had asked me 8 weeks ago.
Yeah, I've seen some photos and videos, so everybody's in masks, and you're, because of that open air, you've been able to really keep the distance within the gym with everything you're trying to accomplish, right?
We have. I mean, I'm not going to lie, the masks were difficult. I mean, at first. I think for anybody that's trying to do any kind of high-intensity training, wearing, you know, anything, any kind of mask is difficult. And training masks were a fad of some sort a few years ago, and they're still a very usable tool. But, you know, wearing a mask like today's mask, what we're doing, it's difficult to get, you know, to breathe in and be able to train in. But our athletes have gotten used to it. And like you said, we do have a lot of garage doors, a lot of open air. But it definitely has increased the complexity of the workouts for sure and made a lot more difficult on our athletes and honestly our employees, because I'm telling you, by the time I leave here, I am drained, as all our employees are.
Yeah, I feel like, especially if you could rewind your brain to the month of March and even early on in April, I mean, it feels like a million years ago, but it felt like there were 36 hours every single day. Like, we were no longer operating on a 24-hour day cycle because the days felt so long.
I remember early on, I remember the feeling like I lived Groundhog Day, like with Bill Murray. Like, seriously felt like I was living that every day like everybody else was. And, I just remember for us, we got shut down on a Sunday. And I remember because I came and actually, we're closed on Sundays. I left something at the facility. Got it. I was on my way home, and I guess kind of felt like something was coming, and then I got the call, and it was just because we were at that point kind of playing by ear, not knowing what to do. It was almost a sense of relief because you were kind of in a situation where you're waiting for that phone call. So it's almost better. I'm a person rather know than kind of be waiting. And then, you know, if you had told me then that we would be where we are now, I would have been like, yeah, be kidding me. It does seem like a lifetime ago too. But it definitely has increased the workload for it. But in the same respect, I think everybody's just happy to be in the building too.
I think you're right about that. Yeah. talking to Devin Driscoll from D1 Sports. Devin, how difficult? I mean, explain to people, because, like, we're getting our little workout videos in. You know, I do my little plan that I found on Instagram with my dumbbells. Yeah. And sometimes I bust out the weight bar if I want to do some deadlifts. But how hard is it to be able to develop your body to play the sport of football, no matter what position? I mean, you're talking about building football bodies during this last 3 months. It has to be extremely difficult for these guys.
You know, it has been a challenge for the athletes, no doubt. But I remember having a conversation very early on the process with one of our guys. And I just said to him, I was like, listen, it's kind of like any of us. If you want to make this, we can make this work if you want to make it work. You know, and you're just going to probably have to work a little bit harder. But the guys that put the work in, it's going to pay off in the long run for it. Might not pay off today or tomorrow, but it will over time, because they're just going to be that much further ahead. And the guys that have been coming in, like Trey Smith just left a little while ago, and that guy's been working his tail off. And it's going to pay off for him in the long run, because he's had to work that much harder and be strategic in his planning. But we did something during the break when we were closed. We called it a library checkout deal. So any of our members could come and actually, if it wasn't bolted into the ground, they could take it home with them and utilize it. And we sent them workouts that we would do throughout the time when we were closed. So that way they kept some normalcy of their day, of their programming design going. But like you said, it is difficult. There's no doubt about it. But I think the guys that really wanted to improve have in this time period.
So, Devin, how similar do you think what the UT players will do when they return for their workouts next week? How similar do you think that will that be to, at least initially, to what you guys have been doing with some of those UT guys at D1?
So the good thing for them is, so Coach Fitzgerald, who was the strength coach for years prior to this, and I had a very good relationship. We had a very similar theology and training, kind of came up through the same coaching tree of sorts. So my style and his style are very congruent, and that's one thing I've heard from all the guys that have been in here. And a lot of these guys I had previous relationships with, and I've been training, like the Mays boys, mm-hmm. Cooper and Cade, Jacob, Austin, that were local that had been training for a while. So they kind of knew what they were getting themselves into. In regards to Coach Fitzgerald and I having very similar protocols and the way we go about things, there was some familiarity there. So again, they're like, oh, I'm familiar with this. I'm able to do these things. I'm used to this. So when it came to speaking a language, they were similar. And A.J. Artis, who's going to be overseeing the strength conditioning moving forward, is awesome. He's going to be a great head strength coach, I think. And he's going to be working with the guys. And I think what's great is the guys they haven't missed a step, because it's very similar. I guess the only difference for them the biggest difference for them, I should say, is just the amount of people they're training with. You know, when they're in that atmosphere, it's competitive, and there's just so much testosterone going in that area. They're yelling, they're screaming. It's very conducive to really pushing yourself. It's not as easy to do that when we're running a business here. You know, there's going to be some different language and verbatim being used, obviously, in our setting compared to a university. Even though we actually are running a business with little kids around them at boot camps, and all of a sudden I've got Trey squatting 405 or 10, it's going to be a little bit different than what they could be yelling if they were in the weight room. Besides that, though, I think they're going to be in good shape.
Besides the guys that you mentioned on the current UT football team, that you've worked with, who are a few other guys that have been in there that you've worked out with?
Daryl Taylor, that just got picked up by the Seahawks in the second round, has been working incredibly hard over the last few weeks and months during this process. We've made some huge gains with him. I think he's going to have a phenomenal year for the Seahawks. Daniel Batuli, who got picked up by the Rams this year. You know, obviously, I think this situation really hurt him, because he wasn't able to show teams and scouts like that he was healthy and that he could produce and what he could do, what he needed to do. But I mean, that guy is just made incredible gains over the last few weeks. Eli and Ethan Wolf, the Wolf brothers, I'm very close to Eli. I have it for years, and he had a great combine. We did a pro day for a lot of our guys that were unable to have pro days. We did one here and did live casted it and then provided it. He crushed it. Ethan Wolf, who used to be at North Tennessee, now with the Rams as well, he's doing great. And there's some diamonds in the rough. I think Dustin Nickel, that just finished East Tennessee State University, played at Webb. He's going through the professional process as a long snapper. I mean, he's incredible. That guy's a freak. I mean, there's just some guys that really put some work in. And then we've got a lot of basketball guys from the Bobby Mays group. And then Jordan Bowden from University of Tennessee has been training with me. He just left a while ago. He's unfortunately, he found out that his situation got pushed back to the draft. So he's got another 4 months of training, which can be a little bit aggravating for him. But just having to put that everything get pushed back. But he's working incredibly hard. I think he's going to do great.
Hey, you mentioned Craig Fitzgerald and A.J. Artison, those guys. How well do you know Jeremy Pruitt and some of the staff members at UT right now?
I'm not too familiar with Coach Pruitt. A.J. I've gotten close with over the last few months because of the situation. Coach Fitzgerald I was very close with and have a lot of mutual friends in the business. So him and I were quite close. And then Coach Martin I know through different channels throughout the years, T, and then some other coaches I know relatively well, but definitely the strength staff I've been closest with. And I think this is good of a staff. Since the last 15 years I've seen, this strength staff they've got right now far exceeds anything I've seen, especially when Coach Fitz has left them in a great position. I think they're going to be the perfect fit for that program.
Thank you so much, Devin Driscoll, for joining us and for working those guys. We're all going to be cheering them on in 2020. So we appreciate your hard work.
Absolutely.
And their hard work out at D1 Sports. But, Devin, thanks so much for joining the program today. We really appreciate all your insight.
Thanks, Devin.
Thanks, guys. Have a good day.
All right, that's Devin Driscoll joining us on the Stanley Fenton Gates Hotline. When we come back, you're going to hear from head coach of the Vols. This could actually end up swaying some power poles there, Vince Ferrara, because Jeremy Pruitt's not afraid to play freshman, and he's going to tell you why. That's coming up next on Sports 180 on the Sports Animal. Into Devin Driscoll from D1 Sports for being on and shedding some light. It just does not fall on deaf ears for me, the task that these players were faced with trying to keep their bodies ready to play football with limited resources. I mean, not everybody has a D1 to go to in their town or the ability to, go out to the store and buy weights, and especially the weights that they have to lift. I mean, everybody can go buy a set of 10-pound dumbbells, right? I mean, this could cost you about $20. But when you're talking about the reps that those guys have to do and the weight they need to be lifting, it's still just so amazing what these guys were able to get done over 3 months. And then this reacclimation period, it's going to be interesting too.
Well, I think that's why you see a lot of the UT players and athletes gravitating towards a place like that because of the facilities. It's more open, so you're at less risk. And then also, how about them to his members? If it's not bolted down, come get it, take it home. Just bring it back. and that's how you develop a relationship with your members and the athletes you work with. They work with Scott Stallings, Scott Hot Sauce Holtzman, the UFC.
Yep.
You talked about Jordan Bowden. So they do a lot beyond the football team. But really good work.
And throwing out some of the TBT volunteers, the basketball tournament volunteers that Bobby Mays is heading up. So, looking forward to that. And I told you when we had Ron Slay on earlier this week, I think Shamiqua Holdsclaw has become his virtual personal trainer, because she is always holding Ron accountable via social media. So, you got to get those workouts in where you can fit them in and get right.
Yeah, we had Gary Maidenwald from the Strength and Performance at Tennessee Basketball, and he talked about how, look, here's a plan for this if you have this, this if you have this, this if you have nothing. We got a plan for you. And so that takes out all the excuses. And when you have access to a facility like that, or if you have people like UT setting you up with a plan at home, excuses are out the window. Then it's a matter of just doing it.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. We were talking a little bit about who the best defensive players on this football team, not named Henry Toʻatoʻa, were. We're gonna rank the top five. It'll actually be numbers 2 through 6 because I think we can speak for John Wilkerson. Henry T is number one across the board for all of us.
So wait, just to clarify, are we including Henry T on our top five defenders,
or is it
outside of him?
Yeah. Gotcha. Like, we're penciling in he's number one, so then you're doing the next five. We'll speak for John Wilkerson in that one. But when you look at it, a couple of freshman names could appear on those power polls later. And Jeremy Pruitt recently talked during the Big Orange Connect event that they had at the University of Tennessee a couple of nights ago about the ability for freshmen to play early.
No, I don't think so. Historically, you know, there used to not be any mid-year guys. Everybody came during the summer. And lots of times, it hadn't been that long ago that they didn't report until August. So we've got really good teachers on our staff. They've got great teaching progressions, the way we install, the way we teach concepts. I don't see any problem with a young guy being, or, you know, having the opportunity and the knowledge to be able to step in and compete right away.
That might be more true right now, Vince, because there's sort of a level playing field to some respect because of the shortened off season and the lack of workouts that everybody went through as a group. So theoretically, if you're a freshman and you were taking care of business during the coronavirus shutdown and you were still getting your workouts in, you're studying your playbook and you're knowing those concepts, you might be on par with even returning players that maybe were just at a certain level and hadn't elevated any.
If you have the right guys with the right makeup, the right work ethic, and they were those characteristics and traits were important in recruiting, then what are those guys going to be doing right now? They're going to be trying to outwork their teammates. They're going to be trying to outwork everybody else in the league and around the country. And that's how you get better, and that's how you you come out of this with an advantage. And I think the coaching staff's ability to adjust on the fly, and then also the fact that they could work the way they teach, and you mentioned there at the end, the way they teach concepts, he has such full confidence in what they do and their ability to teach that during this time where normally you wouldn't get to do football things with them, they are able to do football things virtually. So you can do more detailed teaching of the players during this period because they allow, you know, the rules have been opened up to allow you to do coaching to offset the fact that you didn't get them on the field. I think Jeremy Pruitt feels very confident that, hey, guys, if they're doing the right thing and they have ability, this isn't setting them back. I think it's an interesting thing we've learned during this process about Tennessee.
Do you think, and the quick question before we're going to take a break and bring Braden Gall from Athlon Sports on, but I just don't hear any more buzz. Going back to what Will Shelton's point was, if we were talking about this same conversation 1 year ago today, Alante Taylor would have most likely been in our top five, I think, very easily. I'm having a hard time. I really want to put him in, and we'll see how it all ends up shaking out, but I don't think it's a foregone conclusion that he is. Well, somebody else that would have been in that top five is J.J. Peterson for so many people there, Vince Ferrara. I mean, are we ever going to see the potential develop, or is it just a foregone conclusion that it just didn't work out for him the way that we thought it would?
I don't think you can rule him out yet. He's a redshirt sophomore, so he still has a couple of years to figure that out. He came in late, which set him back, and then got hurt, so he really wasn't
and out of shape. When he came in, yeah.
Absolutely, which was a bad sign. And then last year I thought, all right, with what he went through his freshman year, there's no way this guy isn't motivated and isn't going to be 100% dialed in, and he was never really a factor. He's played 17 games without a start so far, and this was a high four-star, much closer to a five-star. Yeah. That's the kind of talent. I mean, they beat out Alabama and many others for him, but I don't think you can fully rule him out yet because he has – so much ability. And again, here's another. The opportunity's yours. Here it is. And what does J.J. Peterson do with it? What has he been doing? The opportunity is there. There's spots available for him to make an impact. So I wouldn't rule him out yet.
We'll see what Braden Gall thinks. He's coming up next from Athlon Sports right here on Sports 180 on the Sports Animal.
Thing about sports is it never stops. Here's another 60-second sports minute on the Sports Animal.
All right, yesterday, three-star cornerback commit for the 2021 class for Tennessee, Nate Evans, announced that he has flipped his commitment from the Vols to NC State. Tennessee now sits with 23 total known commitments for the 21 class and still has the second-ranked class in the country and first in the SEC per 247 Sports. And the NCAA announced on Thursday that the deadline for basketball players to withdraw their name from the NBA draft and maintain college eligibility will be August 3rd or either 10 days after the draft combine. And other college news, according to a report, at least five Alabama Crimson Tide football players have tested positive for the coronavirus. Athletic activities on SEC campuses are set to begin on June 8th. And also, the University of Georgia has given AD Greg McGarrity a one-year contract extension. Good afternoon. I'm Logan Ward.
Vincent Gates Hotline, where Brayden Gall, who usually joins us on Wednesdays, making a Friday appearance from Athlon Sports. Brayden, we've been talking the defensive side of the football today, and one of the biggest things we're trying to figure out is, outside of Henry Toa, who is Tennessee's best defensive player?
Wow. that's a complicated question. There might be somebody in the secondary at corner that might probably take exception to that, especially as an upperclassman in Thompson. But I think your guess is as good as mine after Henry, because I think there's just no question that he's an elite player, an elite talent. I don't think anybody in the front seven. I think they're dependable, nice pieces. One of these young guys could develop into a stud, but I think probably, I mean, I don't, you know, is Bryce Thompson the one who's getting all the votes? I would assume he is.
Yeah, that was my vote. And Brayden, it just depends on how you look at it. Is it based on what they've accomplished to this point? Then you got to default to one of those guys. Or is it one of the younger guys that we haven't seen develop that maybe you look at long term? If you're looking at the long term answer, who would be freshman, sophomore, any of those young guys that you might point to that has that potential?
Well, I mean, you look at the depth chart, and there's a lot of options, right? I mean, you've got Jalen McCullough, who's a kid that's got a ton of ability, Crouch, and a lot of linebackers, frankly. I think one of those linebackers is going to become a big-time player, whether it's in that sophomore class, Crouch, Peterson, Harrison, whether it's some of the freshmen that are coming in. There's plenty of opportunities there, and that's where you trust Jeremy Pruitt to develop guys, I mean, especially in the secondary, but even just in general on the defense. So if the things that we knew about Coach Pruitt coming into the job where he's a great recruiter and he knows how to coach up defensive players, if those two things are true, and it appears that they are, then I would expect a number of these players to develop. I do wonder about the defensive line. I know there's a lot of veteran talent there this particular season, but like you said, long term, I don't think any of those guys right now are going to grow into stars. There might be some nice pieces on the depth chart buried as young players, but I would not suggest, I don't think any of the guys up front are those players at this stage when you're talking about the best defensive player on the roster, you know.
Brayden Gall from Athlon Sports joining us on the Stanley Fence and Gates Hotline. Brayden, we're at an interesting time right now, just in society and in sports and how the two relate to each other. What is the last week and a half been like for you as you've watched everything that's evolving and going on and hearing some statements, bold statements being made about taking action and this how that action can come to fruition?
Man, just a light, easy question on a Friday. I think, I mean, obviously I was very sad over the weekend. I don't know how you couldn't watch what was going on in our country and not be saddened over the last couple of weeks by what it is. And unfortunately, not one bit of surprise. We have not learned anything from, you know, the Colin Kaepernick situation. We've not learned anything from Ferguson. We have not learned we just haven't learned anything. And you probably could say we haven't learned anything since Reconstruction, frankly. I think we just need to take a moment to learn and, you know, listen to people, listen to whether it's a friend or a family member, drop your guard, drop your heart, drop all your preconceived notions and just listen to people and share human stories, learn about people. I just think it doesn't take a lot. It doesn't take a lot of effort on a personal level, individually, for each of us to sort of just say, I'm going to be better. I'm as a human being, I'm going to be better at treating other human beings in a better way, in a more loving, peaceful, kind, accepting, empathetic way, by just listening and being better. I think structurally, that's a totally different subject that I'm probably not even qualified to discuss, but there are many people out there that have really great ideas about how to structurally change things, which has to be a part of this. And so we all have to lift our voices up and say, hey, this isn't right. This is not who we are. We're better than this. And we have been better than this for quite some time now, and nothing sort of seems to change. So I think, you know, sustained feedback is critical to the people that are in charge. And I just hope that feedback is productive and good intentioned, and, you know, with a kind heart and an empathetic view towards other people and their experiences in life. And it sucks to watch it all and just not be surprised that we are here again. Yeah, because nothing's changed and we haven't learned anything.
I think there have been some cool moments, though, at least come out of this, to where you see glimmers of hope and real things happening. I give Missouri, and I've said it several times. I mean, not only did they do a march and kneel down, but then Eli Drinkwitz helped his players get registered to vote. You see Marvin Wilson coming out, kind of calling out his new head coach in Mike Norvell, and then coming out with an Instagram post yesterday. These are the three things that we are currently going to implement, and he laid them all out there. I mean, those are powerful moments.
Well, and this is where I, like, you know, we make fun of young people a lot, right? We joke about millennials. They're like, I'm technically a millennial, but I don't really identify as a millennial because I don't feel like one. I'm old. I have kids. Like, I don't know how to work Snapchat, whatever. Like, young people are, like, we give them a hard time, and we joke, and we poke and all that stuff with young people, but they are truly exceptional. Like, I'm around so many of them with the charity, the work that I do here in Nashville, and like you just pointed out, you know, if you had told me at 22 years old, I would have figured out a way to, like, systematically approach racism as a football player. I was worried about where I was going to have a beer that night, you know? And so I just think that, that young people are incredible, and they will have so many extraordinary ideas that come out of this, in particular in sports. Sports has always pulled us through the lens of a lot of social issues. And I think certainly a locker room is such an incredible, diverse place of so many different people from so many different places, that if you've ever played a sport in a locker room, at even the high school level or the college level, you totally understand what it means to be in that group of just incredible diversity. And so I think that sports has always been there. And so I'm with you. I'm hopeful. I think Nashville is actually, in the state of Tennessee in general, despite a few things that took place early on, I think since sort of the Saturday night stuff here in Nashville, like the way protesters and police have interacted with each other has actually been extremely hopeful and really impressive to watch. Like, I think that, you know, I'm not bragging on Nashville in particular here, but I've paid more attention to it, and I feel like I've seen a lot more positive things in the last few days, this week in particular, after sort of the wildness of the weekend, a lot better than a lot of other cities are handling it. And so I don't know how it's been in Knoxville, but I think there's lots of examples of people putting arms around each other and just saying, hey, we're better than this. And so I'm with you. I am hopeful. I'm not surprised we're here again battling the same fight, but I'm with you. I'm very hopeful, and I do think sports are going to play a big role in bringing people together, because we all love sitting next to each other cheering on our favorite team. And that moment, you know, we're all like at our best, sort of. And we just sit next to each other wherever we're from, economic background, you know, gender, race, religion, whatever. Like, you're all unified in your love of one sport. And I think that's why sports has always been so powerful when it comes to some of these issues.
Brayden, obviously for the media, not as important or impactful as the fans, but what do you think covering college football will look like for a media member, the differences that's going to be like this fall?
He's asking. Let me translate that. He's asking, can access be any more limited?
right. Like, that's what's funny, because everybody asks, and we've probably discussed this on the show. I've done probably 1,000 interviews the last couple of weeks, but we've probably discussed this, how different putting the magazine together at Athlon this year has been. By the magazine, athlonsports.com, by the way. That you don't, you know, we didn't have access to spring practices and depth charts and analysis and interviews and all this stuff. But, like, I immediately then just go, well, how much stuff did you really learn anyway being around Nick, like, you're not allowed to watch Alabama practice. You're not allowed to watch LSU practice. You're not allowed to watch Tennessee practice. So the little feudal dictators, they still run all the information. They still control it all. And so, you're right. The access will be even more limited. I've got plenty of criticism for the media as a member of the media. I think, we do a lot of things poorly, but I think when it comes to try to get information from coaches in college football, I don't think that's a media problem. I think that's a fact that the highest paid state employee for most SEC schools is the head football coach, and who's going to tell that person what to do with information? Nobody.
Yeah. Speaking of the magazine, you guys listed the top 10 biggest jumps from 2019 to 2020 in those preseason team rankings. Louisville at plus 51 was astounding. And then Tennessee's in that top 10 too. What stood out about that biggest jump or even the biggest drop in those rankings?
So some of those, and we just did a whole podcast about it and kind of diving into why teams made big jumps or big falls. And so I do recommend listening to the entire thing, Cover 2 Podcast, rate, review, and subscribe. But I think, like, Louisville, for example, is a product of how bad they were under Bobby Petrino at the end of his year. So the preseason expectations last year were so bad, they were, 81st in the nation, right? Well, clearly Scott Satterfield did a lot of really good work with a better-than-we-thought roster because, Bobby Petrino, things had been so bad under him. So they jump up to 30th, and that's a huge jump, the biggest jump of any team as far as preseason expectations go. And really, this is a measure of preseason expectations. Georgia and Florida are basically the same as they were last year. I think, 3-8 maybe last year. I think they're 6-7 this year. And Tennessee goes from, I think, 47 to 26 in our ranking. So that's plus 20 spots, or 46 to 26, something like that. And in theory, you could argue that's cutting the deficit in half, right? Like, you were, from a preseason expectation standpoint, you were twice as far behind Florida and Georgia last year as you are this year. And I think that's a testament to the job this coaching staff has done putting together a roster and developing players. It doesn't mean there's not a whole lot of work to go. There's other teams that took huge jumps because they were so god-awful. Like, Oregon State jumped up 35 spots, but, like, that's because they were in the 90s last year. Now they're in the 60s. They're still not very good, but they were better than, like, really, really, really bad. So there's some of that. A lot of teams in the Pac-12 are dropping back, which I think is bad news for the Pac-12. You look at Washington's dropping a lot. Utah's taking a major step back. Two teams that have been sort of playoff contending type teams the last few years, those two teams are taking major steps back. Colorado, Arizona, it's just not, there's a couple of good teams. I like Cal, USC, Arizona State, but mostly Washington State even is taking a huge drop. The Pac-12 in general is really volatile this year. And then the one that stands out to me from, like, was in the playoff a few years ago and now is barely top 50 is Michigan State. I mean, Michigan State, the erosion of the program at Michigan State is just, it's tough to watch. Like, they were in the playoff 5 years ago, and now they're barely a top 50 team in America.
Well, and then when D'Antonio, when he retired, I mean, that was just kind of bad timing, too. I thought it left the school in a lurch a little bit. Hey, I know we're running out of time, but, Brayden, I know you went to the University of Tennessee. You know all about the history of Tennessee. I got to get your thoughts on the passing of Johnny Majors earlier this week and just what kind of crossed your mind whenever you heard that news that Coach Majors had passed.
Yeah, the first thing I tried to do was kind of recall conversations you have. You know, Pat Dye as well, passing with Auburn. I've interviewed him a few times, and you just remember your conversations is the first thing you think about. And I've talked to a lot of former coaches in my career, 16 years, as you guys have as well. And there are so many, interesting personalities that tell great stories, and the Jackie Sherrills and the Gene Stallings and all these just sort of, pillars of the past of college football. And I'm just not sure there's any of them that sort of have the way Johnny Majors carried himself and the way he interacted with people and the way he talked to people, the way Tennessee was in his blood from the beginning through the end, even with a couple of stops elsewhere and having great success at Pittsburgh and winning a national championship. He's Tennessee through and through. And so I think there's a lot of guys that are, quick with the joke and fun. Even at, like, 84, 85, 86 years old, you can have I remember Gene Stallings one time I worked with him, and he was just, no opinions, no personality. All of a sudden the red light comes on. We're doing a broadcast, and all of a sudden he's, lights up like a Christmas tree. So that's not the way it felt talking to Coach Majors. It felt like he was himself all the time and genuine. And, you know, there's nothing I can really say that's going to add to his legacy. I think it speaks for itself. And as a person who went to high school in Tennessee and went to the University of Tennessee, it's hard not to appreciate and love all the things that he accomplished.
Subscribe to the Cover 2 podcast. And, Braden, tell everybody how they can get their hands on that highly coveted Athlon Sports magazine.
Yeah, athlonsports.com is the website. Pretty straightforward. Go right there at the top. Click the little button. Buy your magazine. We'll ship it to you. If in Knoxville, if you want a Tennessee cover, you can go out to bookstores and get it as well. Magazine stands all over the place. But if you happen to be one of those rare Florida fans or Georgia fans and you want your cover, the website's going to be the best way to get it. And it's also a little safer as well. You don't have to go out there. So go get yourself a magazine, athlonsports.com. We obviously appreciate all the support this year during all this crazy stuff that we're dealing with. So athlonsports.com is the website.
And we appreciate you joining us every single week. That's Braden Gall from Athlon Sports. Have a great weekend, Braden, and we'll talk to you again on Wednesday.
Thanks, Braden.
Absolutely. You guys too.
All right, that's Braden Gall, Athlon Sports, and part of the Cover 2 podcast. When we come back, John Wilkerson is set to join the program. Sports Talk is officially on the horizon. We're ranking our top five defensive players for the Vols in 2020 that are not named Henry Toa-Toa. So he would be unanimously the number one pick. So we'll have that power poll coming up for you. Also, hear what's on the way for Sports Talk. That's coming up next on Sports 180. Final segment of Sports 180. I'm Heather Harrington along with Vince Ferrara. We're pleased to be joined right now by Sports Talk's one and only John Wilkerson. John, happy Friday to you.
Happy Friday right back at you. How is everything?
Everything is ending on a high note because we actually talked about football today and it felt so good.
I'll bet. And that's exactly what we want to hear at this point in time.
Yeah, definitely a week that was an emotional roller coaster for a lot of people. I think there's definitely some positive things that have come out of this week, and hopefully you'll continue to hear more of that down the road.
And I think you will, because I just think it has, we'll just say, earned a spot at the table. And so for that reason, I think it's something that you will see be a part of the conversation, not just at the NFL or Power Five, but I think through all ranks of football, and especially high school. Very interested to see exactly what the impact could be on just the mindset moving forward in terms of the conversation and dialogue.
I think that's great to point out because those high school athletes, so impressionable at that age, you want to see the positivity of this conversation trickle down to that level.
Exactly.
Yeah. Okay, I know we're short on time, so let's go ahead and hit today's power poll.
Captain, we're losing power on the warp engine.
Nuclear power pants.
What's up? I'm Kenny Powers.
You don't know the power of the dark side.
I have the power!
With great power comes great responsibility.
Full power, Mr. Scott.
Power poll, driven by Ted Russell Ford. Two locations to serve you, Kingston Pike and Parkside Drive.
So, John, we assumed that Henry Toa-Toa would be the number one name on our power poll. So we're going to rank the next five top five defensive players for the Vols football roster for the 2020 season. So start us off, please, sir.
All right. And so I will go number five since Toa-Toa is not a part of the list. We know he's number one. I am going to go 5-1. But I go number five, Keybon Bennett. I like the way that he came on last year, and he could be instrumental in trying to help the Volunteers off the edge this season. Number four, he could very well be higher on the list, Sean Schamberger. What he meant to Tennessee at the end of the year compared to the start, very impressive, and good on him for the hard work and dedication he put in. Number three, Emmett Gooden. Could be key for the Volunteers up front. Obviously, Tennessee had to make do without him as he tore his ACL before the season started. Number two, Quavaris Crouch. I think he's going to be outstanding. And number one, I agree with Vince in hearing your all's conversation earlier, Bryce Thompson would be my number one on this list, which technically makes him number two.
All right, Vince Ferrara, your top five players not named Henry Toa-Toa on Tennessee's defense.
Yeah, Heather, a couple of honorable mentions. I do not have Emmett Gooden in that list. You know, when he played last year, there was a little bit of inconsistency to him. I want to see what he's like after the injury, so I have him outside the top five, along with Warren Burrell, who I still think has a really bright future for Tennessee. At number five, I had to find one spot for him, and that's Keyshawn Lawrence. He is my biggest impact player for Tennessee among the freshmen, so I slid him in there at number five. I think he's going to play, and he's going to play a lot. At number four, look at John Wilkerson doing it. Very astute. I have Sean Schamberger at number four. Schamberger, so effective. He had a couple of sacks. He had tackles for loss, and he was really good at blitzing, playing that nickel corner, 46 tackles. Sean Schamberger did a nice job. I have him number four. Number three, Kavaris Crouch. Got to find a spot for him, but he is a football player. Two, Jalen McCullough, what he did, the way he handled himself, his taking over that starting role at that other safety spot. I'm in number two. And in number one, as we talked about earlier, Bryce Thompson. I think there's more that he can do to elevate himself as well.
All right, my top five. I also sneak a newcomer into the mix. I'm going to go with Keyshawn Lawrence with you as well, Vince. I think the opportunity is going to be there, and I think he has the opportunity to shine. Number four is going to be Jalen McCullough for me. I'm going to go ahead and give him the benefit of the doubt of being totally healthy when Tennessee comes back around. That's my number three spot with Emmett Gooden. Cannot wait to see him on the defensive line. I know we were all excited about it last year, and then the injury occurred. I've got Bryce Thompson at number two. That might be short-sighted on my part, but I'm going to put Kavaris Crouch just because of his versatility. I think he's one of the best athletes on that defense, so I'm going to go with Q Crouch as my number one. That's today's Power Poll presented by Ted Russell Ford. We appreciate them. John Wilkerson, what's coming up today on Sports Talk?
Well, first, I'm going to argue point of parliamentary procedure. This was offered to me as top returning player. Otherwise, I would have had Lawrence in my top five. He's not a returning player. He's a newcomer.
Oh,
but anyhow.
If I said that, I am so sorry. I'll have to go back and check the text thread.
But anyhow, I'm here at Oak Ridge Nissan, so we're excited about that as it's their sizzling summer sale. We'll tell you all about that throughout the course of the afternoon. Jesse Smithy of 5starpreps.com, he'll be along at 3:35. John McClain of the Houston Chronicle, kind enough with the passing of Coach Majors and what Wednesday's show turned into. He was gracious enough to slide back to today. So our number two starts with John McClain, our good friend in Houston with the Chronicle. We'll talk a lot about the National Football League. We have Grace Christian track coach Brian Christopher. He'll be joining us at 4:35 as we will talk about one of his top seniors, as well as what it was like to experience the year that really wasn't. And then at 5 o'clock, a special interview. In fact, it'll be two guys, two for one. Garrett Crochet and Alaric Solari will join us to start hour number three. We'll have comments from Jeremy Pruitt, Philip Fulmer, and Rick Barnes. And of course, it wouldn't be Friday without Hamer Time with Steve Hamer. So all that and more today on Sports Talk at Oak Ridge Nissan.
Stop. Hamer Time. Do. We are going to be looking forward to hearing everything that you and Jimmy have in store for us coming up on Sports Talk next. We hope you guys have a great weekend. Vince, awesome job filling in this week. Thank you so much, all the hard work. Thank you. Logan Ward back at the studio pushing all the right buttons. Here comes Sports Talk on the way next on the Sports Animal.